All right, welcome to the Rewire Podcast. I have a very special episode today. I have two incredible human beings here who I've had the opportunity to have on the podcast before. And with the holiday season approaching, we thought it would be a great time to come together to see how we can play a better game this holiday season. So in my previous podcast, if you're just seeing this for the first time, definitely circle back on the interviews with both of these amazing people, as they have incredible stories on living this lifestyle and overcoming all types of obstacles to be where we are today to share with you. Dr. Haymare is back today. So Jesse, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's such a pleasure to be here with you and Marcus.
Yes. So Dr. H is the founder of Well Empowered, and she focuses on the root cause of health symptoms, which I love. And brother, Marcus, back again. Thank you for being here, buddy.
It's my pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. Marcus is a coach, focuses on stress management, binge eating, amongst other things. So this is a perfect combination, I think, today for this conversation. So let's just jump right into this and talking about the upcoming holiday season. So we're right at the beginning of December right now. I'm going to be, this podcast will be released just soon after this. So it's timely for the holidays. But going into the holidays, we were talking a little bit before recording about how do we set our mindsets moving into the holidays? How do we create maybe new intentions? And I was also sharing that for myself, unhealthy patterns year over year, when it came to the holidays, it just seemed to me that was the green light for me to binge everything, food, alcohol, not exercise, no balance, just do those things for several days in a row until I could not stand it anymore. And, you know, just entering the new year feeling broken and behind and having to play that catch-up game. And I think there's opportunities for us to enjoy all the company and the food and all the temptations, but maybe find some balance there. So I would love for either of you just to open up and you know, maybe start a little bit around setting intentions and mindset moving into this.
Well,
Dr. Haymare, would you like to go
sure.
first?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure we have both have so much to say about it, Marcus. But I love that you're starting with intention, Brian, because you know, to me, that really is where our journey towards elevated and elevating health, like elevated in how we feel, but elevating in the way we're able to show up for ourselves and others, really begins with getting grounded in our intention, right? And so to acknowledge one of the things that you spoke to, Brian, about how the holidays commonly go for people, right? It really is an environment. And by environment, I mean both conversational environment, like what people have to say about how to care for yourself around the holidays, as well as the logistical environment, the parties and the speed with which we're moving at this time of year is usually faster than other times of year. So all of it together really sets the stage for real challenges, but certainly not insurmountable. But I bring that to the conversation really again, right? Because you already acknowledged it, to encourage the, you know, all who are listening to really be gentle with yourself as you kind of move through this, but also getting clear on, you know, if we think about intention, I often think there are a couple of things that are useful to think about. It's a little bit of where do we want to move towards? And by move towards in particular, I invite you to contemplate your experience. You know, like if you think about maybe an upcoming holiday gathering, how would you like to feel as you're getting ready for bed? How would you like to feel the next day, both physically, but also in the sense of like being proud of yourself? Proud of yourself for the way you've cared for yourself. So that's, you know, a way to start to get in the thinking about intention, where you're going towards. And then also it can be helpful to think about what we're going away from. In other words, we know, okay, the old way of being about the holidays, in other words, just let it all go, take a quote unquote screwed approach until January 1st or 2nd. We know that's not typically a recipe for feeling great physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, in all the ways that most of us really care to feel great. So I'll just, you know, kind of start with that in the way of inviting people to start to contemplate, okay, what is my intended experience? What do I want to go towards this holiday season? And maybe a little bit of what do I want to go away from?
Yeah, right. Well, I love, yeah, what do you want to feel when you go to bed? And how do you want to feel the next day? You know, those are things that don't usually come into the equation when we're making those decisions. So I love that. What would you say, Marcus?
I'd say that I absolutely agree with everything the doctor has just said. Absolutely. I think the intention is really important, and thinking like, how do I want to feel? Like, what experience do I want this to be for me? Something that I could add would be to look out for certain traps. Like, if in the back of your mind, you might have some grand plans for some extremely restrictive or extreme approach you might be looking at, and you're like, in January, I'm going to reinvent everything. I'm going to really get a handle on it this time. And if we kind of go into the holiday season with even just like the back of our mind anticipating this, you know, big gargantuan effort and restriction and all this hard stuff going on in January, it's going to be really hard not to see that kind of holiday celebration as like this limited window of opportunity. And when we feel like there's a limited window of opportunity, especially in terms of like food choices, even alcohol, that kind of thing, it works against us so much, because again, it's that part of our mind going, well, the door to all of this is going to be closed in January. So we've just got to go hard right now. We've got to make the most of it right now. So I guess what I would add to what Dr. Hemeyer just mentioned would be to watch out for that part of your mind that might be kind of planning some big overhaul in January. There's nothing wrong with setting some goals for January and everything like that. That's great. Like, start the new year strong, get excited about what you want to achieve and what you want to do. But if that in the back of our mind is going to be this like torturous, self-sacrificing, awful thing, then it's going to be really hard to make choices during the holiday season that we can go to bed feeling proud of.
I love that.
I love what you pointed to there, Marcus, and that limited window of opportunity. I've never heard it said quite like that. That's beautifully said. What came to mind is like, you know, we're just on the heels of like Black Friday. And like, if you kind of think about how it's like, yeah, oh my gosh, I need to buy it all right now. The clock is ticking. I need to spend all my, right? It's very similar, right? That's a beautiful, great, great distinction you illuminated there.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
This is a stressful time, you know, for people, which is, you know, interesting. The holidays we love, when we have that limited time to, you know, maybe wear our pajamas all day long and those types of things. But the stress leading up to the holidays and the stress for some people of just being around certain family and friends and all those things really starts to play into this as well. We can have wonderful intentions going into it, as most of us do, but sometimes we just get pulled back into those patterns. Or if we are overly stressed, and, you know, Dr. H, as you mentioned as well, we're not giving ourselves a bit of grace and going into this as well, putting pressure on ourselves. Often we just instinctually will binge and overeat and just get pulled right back into that old pattern. Any tips on managing our stress through that period as well, so we can make better decisions and be more mindful about our intentions?
Well, I would say, you know, one thing that I really encourage people to take on all the time, but even more so in these very busy seasons, which oftentimes leaves us feeling like we don't have the time, is actually spending time each day to slow down and ground in your intention, ground in how you intend to care for yourself and really like care for yourself, not like, what am I going to eat? You know, what you'll eat or what you won't eat, just coming from this sense of, I'm doing my very best to care for myself, my very best, right? And so grounding in that intention, and that could be something like 2 minutes every morning, I really find it useful to find the pause before the day begins. Because most of us, once the day begins, we're in the day, we're moving with the pace, we're on task, we're, you know, whatever we're up to, it's more difficult to find the pause in the middle of the day. But when you find that home base at the beginning of the day, it becomes more accessible throughout the day. And even gives you a chance to kind of think about, okay, if my true intention is doing my best to care for myself today, just forget about the rest of the week, just today, what are some things that would be useful? Okay, well, I can think about where I might go for lunch, or I might think about bringing lunch, or I might think about how I'm getting myself set up for the cocktail party tonight, in the way of, okay, I'm going to arrive not famished, right? So arriving famished is a pretty, it's kind of a recipe for disaster, right? It's hard to be
sick. Yes.
And make good choices when you arrive at the feast famished. Right. So these, you know, okay, first grounding in your intention, but then also starting to think ahead about how this might be best lived.
I love that. I love how you're starting the day with that space. And, you know, I think for some people they have that practice, but that's, again, something that falls by the wayside during the holidays, where it's probably even more important to have that grounding to center before the
day
starts. And
it doesn't take a lot, right? Sometimes people have a practice they prefer that's maybe 20 or 30 minutes or something more extensive, mm-hmm. but also working with the moment to just realize, okay, I love it when I can get 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. But maybe today all I have is 2 minutes. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm always amazed by the difference 2 minutes makes, even if I'd like more time. It's still like, wow, I'm a whole different person at the end of 2 minutes.
Yeah. Dr. H, I love what you said just then about don't arrive famished. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of the things that I recommend to my clients. It's also one of my like personal golden rules. Don't arrive hungry. I know there's a lot of noise out there from people saying, you know, if you've got like a big holiday meal or whatever, they talk about fasting for part of the day or whatever. I'm like, no. Like, I mean, if that works for someone honestly and truly from the bottom of their heart, then okay, that's great. But as someone who works with people who struggle with eating disorders, binge eating, all this kind of stuff, like, I'm so grateful for that piece of advice that you just shared with us, like to not arrive famished. If we arrive hungry, we're like any drinks that we have are going to hit like a train for a start. And then it's just going to go downhill from there. Food choices become so much more difficult. So I think that's just such a valuable thing to mention. And something I might add is that, you know, this time of year, there's a lot of people who are sometimes stressed, sometimes not showing up as their most emotionally well-regulated selves. Sometimes there might be people kind of throwing their emotional weight around a little bit. And if being in some kind of environment, whether it be a work party or family or something like that, involves being around people who you know might kind of rub you up the wrong way or might kind of grind against you a little bit, or you might struggle to be around, do your best to remember, you know, not my circus, not my monkeys. Like if someone is not managing their own emotions well, if they're being snarky, if they're being impatient, if someone is showing up in kind of like a difficult way, do your best to remember that that's about them. That's about something that's going on for them in their heart, in their mind. It's not an easy time of year for a lot of people, and any of that kind of stuff that shows up, it's not about you. Like if someone brings some stuff to the table, then that's something that's going on for them. So yeah, do your best to kind of keep those boundaries pretty clear in your mind in those situations.
Yes, those boundaries are important, and it's interesting. I you know, just from my own experience with certain friend groups or family, certainly ones from you know, long-standing ones, where there's an expectation as well. Like, oh, what do you mean you're not going to do some shots of tequila for breakfast, or you know, or come on, you know, like, look at, have another plate or have another piece of this or that. Right. So like, how do you recommend people, you know, can say no, or just to create those boundaries? Is there something people can think about in terms of that intention?
No, go ahead, Marcus.
Oh, it's a difficult one, right? Like, it is really difficult, especially when we're around like feeders or people who, you know, we've feeders. All got that one friend, or we know that one person who maybe doesn't have the greatest relationship with alcohol. So their whole thing is to try and get everyone else around them to drink so that they feel cool with drinking themselves. And you know the people around you best. So do your best to play to your strengths in terms of what you know about these people. But I've found it just really helpful when meeting someone like that or being around someone like that, to just be as kind as possible, to be like, hey, yeah, I know that's amazing. I've already had one. Thank you so much. Like, that's so sweet of you. Like, I totally get it, but I couldn't have another one. Like, I always play to the vanity of certain people in those situations. Like, you know, if a guy wants to give me a bunch of shots, I'm like, dude, I don't have the alcohol tolerance that you do. I won't be able to handle it. I'll be under the table, you know, like, say, you know, as diplomatically as necessary, still hold those boundaries. But if someone keeps pushing, that's when I'd say maybe get some space, make an excuse, put a bit of space between you and that person if necessary. So I'd try to handle it politely first and just say, look, thank you so much, but I'm good. I've had some already. I'm amazing. Thank you. But then if they keep pushing, just, I need to be over here for a moment. Sorry, I'll be right back. Like, put that physical space. But yeah. Doctor, what would you say in those situations?
I think your guidance right there is great, Marcus. And, you know, like, remembering the North Star is you caring for you. And so working through, yeah, okay, first approaching it, as you beautifully said, you know, diplomatically, trying to really have them feel good while you feel good about making a choice that you're making for yourself. And then, you know, maybe creating space. And, you know, listen, I don't know about either of you, but I faked taking shots before, right? Like,
yes, know, yeah.
Case scenario, you know, just fake it, figure it out, right? Yeah.
Is that, like, when the person standing behind you cops it in the face?
Leave it on the bar, whatever you do, right? You know, just different ways to skin the cat. And then, you know, also one of the things that I think is helpful, because this is definitely, like, we're social beings, right? So there's the challenges of the logistics, like, okay, what's showing up in our environment? There's the challenges of the social interactions. And then, of course, there's our internal challenges. Maybe we have cravings, stuff like that, right? But if we think about that social aspect, you know, in our journey, this is definitely something that if our intention is to do our very best to honor our health as sacred, then we will need to develop a different relationship to what people have to say about what we're doing or not, and also to what other people are doing or not. And I think about it a little bit like a horse race, like where the horses have the blinders on and they're just, you know, like all the noise, you know, and it does take practice. But coming back to, you know, in the food pushing thing, if you're being a no thank you, when someone says, why not, right? Sometimes people can get a little, people have their stuff about food, right? It's complicated. It's very complicated. So one of the things that can be useful is just simply saying, you know, I know I'm not going to feel well if I do that. Or, you know, I have a big day tomorrow. I really want to feel well. And that's just, I'm just not going to, if I do that. Mostly nobody's going to encourage you to do something that is going to leave you feeling unwell. Right. So if you're going back to that, people get weirded out by, like, oh, I, you know, don't want to gain weight. People get weirded out by that. But you feeling well, mostly people aren't going to push back a whole lot about that when you ground in how you feel, because really that is so fundamentally what it's about.
Yeah. Honor yourself. I love that part. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to do that again, when you're, as Marcus, you said, the feeders and the different types of groups we're with, but really honoring ourself. And as you said, Dr. H, that, you know, typically people are not going to try to push us into not feeling well, certainly if we have the mindfulness around that. Chances are, with the best intentions and the best stress management and all the things, that we're going to probably overindulge a little more than we typically would. If you have any type of routine or eating habits, this is going to be a shift for sure. In terms of offsetting that somewhat, so, you know, is through, you know, more intention around exercise, and typically people will stop going to the gym during the holidays. I used to, and not so much anymore. I still try to find something to move my body, and sleep patterns often are disrupted as well. Any tips around offsetting the overindulgence that may happen?
I actually, I don't believe there's such thing as offsetting overindulgence. So I think it's, you know, it might feel painful to acknowledge I overindulge, but sometimes pain can be useful when we can say, oh gosh, yeah, I did that thing that leaves me feeling not great, as opposed to, you know, pretending we can exercise our way, you know, it out of it or something like that. I would hope that we can use it as a learning experience, and also realize that we're humans, right? There's no future where we're perfect, but there might be a future where that same thing that you've done over and over and over again, that, you know, just, you know, leaves you feeling regretful, like regret by regret, I mean, you look back and you go, gosh, I wish I hadn't done that. That's all I mean by regret. So if you've done that thing over and over again, my wish is that you learn from it. And so you can't undo what you've done, and you can learn from it. And so, you know, really using that to say, okay, great. What would be a better game? You know, thinking about how did I do that again? You know, okay, I arrived famished, right? Or, you know, I arrived, they handed me a shot, and I just took it. I just didn't even think about it, right? It's like, you know, I caught the wave versus doing what you can to avoid the inertia of that, right? Little things like that. So I do not think you can undo overindulgence. And I actually think when people come to terms with that, it can be a real valuable source of evolution.
Good
one. Dr. H, that's like amazing advice. I totally agree with the whole concept of not getting into that pattern of thinking, I'm going to do this and then undo it. It's a really dicey place to get into. It can feed very dysfunctional cycles with food. And it's like, if we think, the moment we start thinking we can undo a food choice, that sets us up to start, you know, winding up, like taking the roller coaster up to the top of the hill, ready to drop it down. And we experience those dips and troughs in our relationship with food and what we're doing. And I love, again, what you mentioned about treating it as something to learn from. Like, if we look at the relationship between choices with food in this case, and feelings like shame and guilt, if we can step outside the shame and guilt, if we can set the shame and guilt aside and focus on the visceral experience, like almost very non-judgmentally, okay, how did that choice feel viscerally? Like, do I feel in my body, like, do I feel the way I want to feel right now? Not so much emotionally, but viscerally, like, was that a good experience? We can set ourselves up to kind of retain the visceral memory of that that choice and make a different choice next time. Whereas if we get too caught up in cycles of guilt and shame, those emotions are more likely to drive us back towards the kind of choices that we regret in the first place. So 100%, I'd say that trying to compensate for these choices is not so much the call, and to tune into how things really make us feel. Because if we can do that, if we can start to channel some true intrinsic motivation surrounding these choices, like, how do I want to be feeling, not through the lens of shame and guilt or guilting myself into making different choices or whatever, but really from a very, very internal visceral perspective, how do I want to feel? So yeah, 100% on the same page with you.
Well, that's amazing. That really just, you know, it's interesting that question I asked you both. Just sort of just, it came up because that's still how I'm programmed and wired to say, okay, if I overdo it, I'm going to have to make it up on the other end somehow, but not necessarily the case or not the case at all, just bringing more awareness to it. And Marcus, I mean, the shame and guilt vibration are the lowest on the human consciousness scale. And you know, we do get stuck in that so often. And that is what brings us back to these unhealthy patterns.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And I really think that, you know, like we've inherited this paradigm that collapses in particular around food, good and bad, with our food and our choices, right? People, I'm sure you hear this all day long, Marcus, right? I cheated, or I was good, or I was bad. And I love it when people are like, so how do you cheat? I'm like, how do I cheat? And then I know I'm like, cheat on myself, right? But then, you know, one of the things I'll say to them, you know, if it's a man, how do you cheat on your wife? You know, or how do you cheat on your husband, right? It's like, there's no cheating on honoring my health, right? There's making choices, but I don't, you know, and so, it's an inherited way of thinking about it, right? And so, you know, just like you said, that good or bad is a fast track to shame, right? Because inevitably we're going to be quote unquote bad, whatever that means, right? When really just foods and beverages, they produce certain outcomes and outcomes in how we feel and outcomes in how our body works and, you know, things like that. But there is, if we can practice giving up that, that association, that good or bad, and even starting with our language, right? Instead of speaking to about food as good or bad, or what you did as good or bad, just actually calling food nutrient dense or not, or, you know, there are a lot of different ways you could play with it, but removing that good or bad, or looking at your actions. Oh yeah, I ate in a way that isn't really a match for my intention, or I ate more than I wish I would have. Okay, those are true. And that's useful to acknowledge. But you can acknowledge those things without layering, you know, starting to layer the shame on.
So just back to the question about exercise then, you know, and keeping in mind that we're not doing this to overcompensate or try to fix something that that happened. But do you recommend people stay active during the holidays, or is there any sort of rule of thumb, or what are your thoughts there?
I'll let you go.
Okay. It's an interesting one because it hinges on our larger relationship with exercise, I guess you'd say. If we have the kind of relationship with exercise that I would encourage someone to have, where it's something that we do very regularly because it makes us feel good and we enjoy doing it, then I would say, why stop? You know, like do what you would normally do if you choose to. I think this cycle of I'm going to give myself a break from this during the holidays or whatever, it almost implies that it's this torturous ordeal that you're putting yourself through most of the year that you then get to have a break from. That said, even the, you know, the greatest athletes in the world, they have like deload weeks and off weeks and everything like that. And if we go so far as to look at a periodized strength and conditioning program, having deload weeks and everything like that is important. So I guess the question of whether to train through the holidays, like it very much depends on your relationship with exercise and what it is that you're doing. Like if it comes around and you're, you know what, like, I don't fancy training the way that I usually do between Christmas and New Year or whatever it is. Like I just want to go have a game of tennis with my wife or something like that. I want to do something different. Like sometimes a mental break, a different kind of movement might be helpful. It's so nuanced and it's so personal. I'd just say the thing to look out for is that if you find yourself thinking, oh my God, like I can't wait for the Christmas holidays because then I get to have a break from exercise. My question would then be, let's talk about your relationship with exercise. Like what are you putting yourself through for the rest of the year? Why are you kind of like gagging for a break? It's not to say that having breaks isn't part of a healthy relationship with exercise, but I think if we reach these times of the year and we're like, oh my God, I just can't wait to have a break, then it's like, let's have a talk about the bigger picture of your relationship with exercise, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly said, Marcus. Really. Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, it's all how we're fueling ourselves and moving ourselves and resting. It's all inside of this bigger context of honoring our health. And so if that's not aligned in the movement space, then yeah, you're going to be looking for an out, right? Rather than in the inquiry of, you know, in this given week or day where I would typically do X, Y, Z, you know, what serves me? What serves me in this week? As opposed to, do I get time off or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I love that question of like, what serves me? That's a great question to take in as far as exercise. Like, you know, what's going to serve me on this particular day? Like, is it a day where trying to squeeze in my usual, you know, Monday, like leg day or whatever would interfere with then getting to our family event? Like, would I be, you know, would it be congruent with what we have planned that day? Like what would genuinely serve me today? Great question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. It seems like a lot of what we're discussing and what you're both are sharing is, you know, a lot of just mindfulness in general, being, you know, putting yourself, honoring yourself, accepting pleasant and unpleasant equally, not overcompensating or flogging yourself in the gym for eating too much, which I've certainly done in the past. And yeah, just bringing more awareness to your emotions and also your intentions around what you might feel after that party or that big dinner. And if you overindulge. So I guess just to, and so that's been amazing because I just think that when it comes to the holidays, sometimes we approach it almost in extremes. Like, okay, I'm going all in on the food and alcohol, and then I'm going to like kill myself in the gym on January 1st. And rather than that, trying to find some sort of balance, and what will serve me, which I love, Dr. H. So to wrap things up, I would just love to ask both of you the question of the title of this podcast. If you just summarize in your own words, I mean, how do we play a better game for the holiday season?
Well, I would
Dr.
say,
H, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. To me, it begins with slowing down and getting clear for yourself how you personally would identify or describe your better game, because the only game to care about is your game, right? Don't worry about the game that Marcus is playing or Brian's playing or I'm playing. Worry about the game that you're playing. So I think it can be really useful to not expect the moon from yourselves, right? This is a big season with a lot of emotions and a lot of gatherings and a lot of things. So maybe you just home in on one or two things that you really see this year. You'd love to play a better game. Maybe for you, it's around alcohol. And maybe you start looking at, okay, on any given night, I'm not going to have any more than X amount of drinks, right? You are defining for yourself what winning looks like. Or maybe it's around going on autopilot when you eat and you decide, okay, I'm going to begin practicing arriving having eaten, right? I'm just not going to arrive famished, to say it more simply, right? So you can define for yourself what winning looks like and really just stay in the game. And if you, I think about this a little bit like falling off the monkey bars. If you fall off the monkey bars, if you said, promised yourself maybe alcohol is your personal challenge and the thing where you place you want to start. And you said, okay, 4 drinks max on any given day, and that's winning to you. Great. And let's say one day you come in at 6. Well, okay, great. The next thing, the next best thing to do is get right back on the monkey bars. If you fall off the monkey bars, the best thing you can do is get back on the monkey bars and see if you can learn something about what had you fall. So really, you know, creating for yourself what winning would look like this holiday season, not expecting the moon, right? Really just keeping it simple and a reach, but achievable, and giving yourself grace in the process and continuing to tap back into your own question of answering your own question of what would be the best game I could play right now, like right now. And also one more thing I'd say is acknowledge yourself, right? Oftentimes we're quick to criticize ourselves when we fail, but completely forget to acknowledge ourselves when we win a game we're playing, right? So if the 4 alcoholic drinks is a win for you, like I really encourage you to acknowledge yourself that night before you go to bed. Like, hey, look what I did. That took something and I did it. Great. Good for you. Yeah. That's awesome.
Nice one. I agree so much with that. Like, and it's a lot of parallels there with what I would say. The something that I've found really helpful is to play with the idea of developing a lot of self-awareness around the concept of diminishing returns. So to get curious about, okay, there's this particular food that I like or this particular drink that I like. How much of that is enjoyable before the ramifications of that or how that makes me feel starts to become less enjoyable? So that point of diminishing returns, like what is the nicest quantity of different things that I can have? And what does that look like for me? Like back in the day, I would start drinking like December 24th, like in the morning, and you know that would be me, and until you know January 2nd, 3rd, whatever, and you know it didn't feel good after a certain period of time. So yeah, like I know for my journey at least, and with food as well, like what quantity of this food leads to me feeling like I've genuinely gotten to enjoy it and it's nice, and also doesn't leave me feeling like I've just been hit by a truck. Mm-hmm. And the caveat there with enjoying these foods is that I would say, again, from working with a lot of people who've struggled with different levels of eating disorders and preoccupation with food and a lot of guilt and shame and overthinking surrounding food choices, do the best you can if you're looking to really connect with certain foods and enjoy the experience of having certain foods, to be present with the food as you're eating it, as you're enjoying it. Because if we get caught up in overthinking, and like we've mentioned before, like if we're up in our head with the guilt and shame and the overthinking and the thinking, how can I make up for this tomorrow? Or what am I going to do in January? Then we're never actually present while we're eating the food, and it has a very genuine effect on our satiety. We're going to then finish eating what we just spent that time eating and think, I don't feel like I really got to enjoy that because I was up in my head, like thinking about it and feeling guilty about it. So then I'm going to want more because I didn't get the experience of actually eating it the first time around. So the more present and non-judgmental and kind with ourselves that we can be while giving ourselves these things, the more they're going to hit the spot on a level of genuine satiety. So those are the things that I would mention.
Yeah. Beautiful. Wow. So much goodness there. And I think my holiday game will be leveled up now because of this conversation. So I just appreciate you both. And just want to acknowledge both of you as well for the work that you do. And you know, you're just so consistent with your message. You live that lifestyle. So thank you so much for shining your light.
Thank you so much, Brian.